Hi, this is Kelly Swales. I'm the web editor of Lab Medicine Magazine at ASGP. Today, I've got a pathologist who's going to tell you everything you need to know about trolley.
Oh, hi. My name is Hui Fan. I am a transfusion medicine fellow at Columbia University, and I would be very happy to talk with you about a recent review paper about transfusion-related acute lung injury, commonly known as trolley, that recently published in Lab Medicine.
Yes, we this article is called Trolley Revisited, and it's now live on the website. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about the pathophysiology of this type of transfusion reaction?
So the exact mechanism for trolley is not unclear at this time. However, people have been proposed two hypotheses. The first hypothesis is the one-hit hypothesis, pretty much saying that trolley may be precipitated by a single clinical event, meaning that when the patient gets transfusion of blood product, they also get transfusion of donor antibodies against the patient's leukocyte, meaning the HLA antibodies or the neutrophil antibodies. And the interaction between the antigen and antibody will activate the complement system and lead to pulmonary leukostasis and neutrophil activation, and this results in endothelial damage and capillary leak, and the end result is acute lung injury. Another hypothesis is called the two-hit hypothesis. It means that the first hit is the patient's underlying disease, because there are some clinical condition that might be predispose this patient to pulmonary endothelial activation, and this will adhere the neutrophils and result in pulmonary sequestration. And then the second hit is when the patient receives the infusion of blood product containing biological response modifiers such as active lipids and antibodies against HLA antigens. And this infusion of this biological active lipids will activate the adherent neutrophils in the pulmonary system already, and again, the end result will lead to neutrophil activation, endothelial damage, capillary leak, and then acute lung injury.
So if a doctor thinks his patient has a transfusion-related acute lung injury, how does he go about making that diagnosis?
So at this time, the diagnosis of trolley is only a clinical diagnosis. There is no laboratory test that can tell you whether the patient has trolley or not. Most clinicians would use the criteria outlined in the Canadian consensus on the trolley diagnosis. In that diagnosis, there are two possible. One is trolley, and the second diagnosis is possible trolley. Let me talk about the diagnosis of trolley. So in order to be qualified to have trolley, the patient must have the symptom of hypoxemia occur within 6 hours of transfusion, and then they must have no pre-existing acute lung injury prior to transfusion, and there must be no other relationship or other explanation of acute lung injury. So how would they define hypoxemia? So if the patient have an arterial blood gas, then you would see a PaO2 over FiO2, the ratio would be less than 300, and if they don't have the ABC result, then they will have the oxygen saturation would be less than 90% on room air. And if they had a chest x-ray, it would show what we call a bilateral white out of the lungs. And importantly, they should have no evidence of left atrial hypertension in order to distinguish trolley from TACO, which is transfusion-associated circulatory overload. Because many patients who receive transfusion are critically ill, and most of them will have like acute lung injury prior to transfusion or other risk factor for acute lung injury, we usually diagnose patients with possible trolley rather than trolley in the hospital. So possible trolley is anything all of the above except for the reason that the patient would have some other explanation besides transfusion for the acute lung injury.
Can you give us just a real brief explanation of what those other alternate reasons could be?
The four alternate reasons could be, you know, like pneumonia, could be like another one, or it could be sepsis, or it could be other reasons that they can have like intubation, that can work with intubation.
I see.
Or ARDS is another one that's commonly confused in those critically ill patients.
So if a doctor really suspects this and they make the diagnosis of trolley, how does one go about treating it?
Well, at this time, there is no definite treatment for trolley. All they can do is give the patient supportive care, like oxygen supplement, or if the patient needs intubation, then they should get intubated. And in most patients, the symptom of hypoxemia will be resolved within 48 to 96 hours after the symptom develop. However, trolley could lead to death, and trolley is the highest transfusion-related mortality reported to the FDA for the past couple of years.
Yes, I know it can be a very serious condition. The most obvious way to avoid that is, of course, to not have a transfusion, but clearly transfusion is absolutely needed in certain circumstances. What are some ways, if you have to transfuse a patient, that we can prevent this sort of reaction from happening?
Well, so for the past couple of years, because trolley is like the highest transfusion-related mortality, so the AABB has recommended several strategies to reduce the incidence of trolley for the patient who needs transfusion, especially the one who needs high plasma volume products, such as apheresis platelet or plasma. So several strategies have been implemented, including, using the plasma from male-only donors, or using the plasma from the female who have been never pregnant, or the female who have been tested negative for HLA antibodies. And then since we implemented those strategies from the donor collection facility point of view, passive surveillance from the UK and from the American Red Cross study have shown that trolley incidents have been decreased.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but there's been some recently published studies that have kind of gone over this?
Yes, so there have been several studies published in the past, but they have been only passive surveillance studies. So recently, in 2012, in the Journal of Blood, Troy and College had been published a study entitled Trolley Incident and Risk Factor that have been two goals. To first, to determine the incidence of trolley by active surveillance, which is different from passive surveillance of study in the past, so we could get an accurate measurement of the incidence of trolley. And second, they also try to look at the risk factor from the transfusion and from the recipient point of view for trolley.
So let's talk a little bit about this study. Can you summarize it for me?
Okay, so let me summarize the study briefly. So this is a prospective case control study done at University of California, San Francisco and Mayo Clinic from 2006 to 2009. They do it by active surveillance of an ABG result in patients who receive transfusion and or the patient who get reported to blood bank as a possible case for trolley. And then in the case control study, they need to select the control. So the controls were selected randomly from patients who received transfusion but did not have any sign or symptom of acute lung injury 12 hours after transfusion of the last unit. And then during the study period, they transfused at two centers more than 460,000 units, and they identified 89 trolley cases. And as expected, and we usually know in the community that trolley is underreported because of passive surveillance, they see that only 45% of these trolley cases actually reported to the blood bank as possible transfusion reactions. And also because of the study period, they would be able to confirm what is found in the passive study, that transfusion, that trolley incident is decreased due to our strategy to reduce trolley, such as to use only plasma from male donor or using plasma from never pregnant women. In that study, they estimated that the incidence of trolley decreased from 1 in 4,000 units to approximately 1 in 12,000 units. So that means this strategy is very effective. And they also perform several statistical analyses to identify the risk factor from both the product point of view and from the patient. So by multivariate analysis, there are two risk factors associated with trali from the blood product point of view. If you transfuse the patient with a product containing the high titer HLA class 2 antibody, but not class 1 antibody, then you will have an increased risk of trali. The odds increase 3.2 times per every tenfold increase in the volume of HLA class 2 antibody transfused. The second risk factor is the volume of the anti-neutrophil antibodies transfused to the patient. The odds increase 1.71 times for every 100 milliliter increase in the volume of the transfusion. Interestingly, they found evidence against the hypothesis that longer red cell storage has been a risk factor for trali. And from the patient point of view, which patient is at risk for trali, they found that the patient who have the chronic alcohol abuse is higher risk for trali. Similarly, the patient who have positive fluid balance, the patient who have peak airway pressure more than 30 centimeters of water within 12 hours after intubation but prior to transfusion, the patient who have shock prior to transfusion, the patient who is a current smoker, and the patient who have liver disease, especially after liver transplantation, and the patient who have higher level of IL-8 as a marker for inflammation, they all are at risk for trali. Despite this is a good study because it is a active surveillance to give us a more accurate result of the incident. And then since trali is rare clinical entity, the odds ratio could be approximately the risk ratio. In this case, there are still some limitation because if the patient receives transfusion and they don't have ABG afterward and they don't report a transfusion reaction, we might miss that case. That is one of the limitations of the study. Another limitation of the study they pointed out in the paper is that they could not access the impact of measure to reduce transfusion of platelets from alloimmunized donor because that is implemented later in the study. So they could not have enough subjects for that estimation.
So it seems like we're really sort of making headway with using male donors, using nulliparous females as donors. Uh-huh. We're really making some headway in reducing the cases or the incidence of trali. So where do we go from here? What are the next steps to reduce the incidence of this transfusion reaction even more?
So there are several future directions that the study provides us. First of all, because in the paper, they identified the risk factor associated with trali in most of the patients. In some of the patients, they could not find what the risks are. So we can further investigate in a larger study to see what are the remaining risks that are unknown from this study. Another thing that we can do is we can reduce risk from the patient point of view. As they pointed out that there are several risk factors associated with the patient underlying disease that put them at high risk for trali. Maybe we can improve our ICU management better. For example, we can try to decrease the peak airway pressure in the patient after intubation. That could reduce the risk for trali. We can also have public health campaign to reduce the rate of smoking because being a smoker associated with a higher risk for trali. Another way that we can go further from this study is focus on a personalized medicine. For example, we can identify the patient at risk for trali, such as the patient after liver transplantation, and then we can HLA type in the patient, and then we can also screen the unit, like the apheresis platelets or the plasma, for HLA antibodies, and we try to avoid giving the high volume plasma unit that contain the antibody for the specific antigen that the patient have. That could further reduce the incidence of trali. However, this is cost effective or not, or how effective this is unknown, and it could be further elucidated in future study. And then, as you can see that in this study, they point out that the risk for getting trali is cumulative, which is not only depend on the strength of the antibody. is it also depends on the volume of the antibody the patient receives. Therefore, we can implement restricted transfusion strategy, such as transfuse only when you need to, and to reduce the transfusion of unnecessary red cell or low volume plasma product that might contain the anti-HLA or anti-neutrophil antibody, therefore reduce the cumulative risk of trali that the patient might have.
Yeah, that all sounds, I think, like a good way to go in the future. Thank you so much, Dr. Pham, for taking the time to speak with our readers and our listeners today about trali. Hopefully they've learned a little something.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much for having me the opportunity to speak with the readers about trali.
Thank you, Dr. Pham.
Thank you.